Welcome back. This is Ladies with Gumption, episode 187, Guilt Trip. My name is Jessica, and we are down one lady, but I have another lady with me, and her name is
May.
So it's just the two of us, and yes. We are recapping DCTV in a flash while Tati is out on vacation, I guess you would call
She's
it.
She's out. I don't know how to call it vacation.
Out of the country. Out of the yes. country, out of podcasting availability. But you can contact us with all of your feedback for the shows to ladieswgumption@gmail.com. You can find us on Twitter and follow along with our live tweets at @DCTVGumption. You can send us asks on Tumblr, unless you are a Kate only stan, in which case, fuck you, and I have nothing to say. You can find our podcast on, like, we're not going to answer your shit, so stop wasting your keystrokes. You can find our podcasts on Apple Podcasts, iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, Stitcher. If you would like to donate $10 a month or just $10 like one time and then cancel, you can go to our Patreon and find a library of extra content. You get these episodes 24 hours in advance, but you also get DC premium content. So all the HBO Max shows, we've done Titans, we've done Doom Patrol. You can also get Netflix series. We've done MCUverse. Recently, we did movies. So we've done Encanto. We've done Turning Red. We've done Batman. We've done Bridgerton Season 2. So it's a wide range of content that you can find at www.patreon.com/DCTVGumption. In the news, as alluded to earlier in my ode to Kate only stands, we did get the sad, sad news last Friday, I think it was, that both Batwoman and Legends of Tomorrow are not being renewed for additional seasons. What are your reactions, May?
I was really sad about it. I didn't see it immediately, but, like, I had to stop. My sister was like, what's wrong? I was like, Batwoman and Legends were canceled. I felt like... It was just so abrupt, and I guess because I was holding out hope that they would somehow both be renewed, at least I felt like if Legends got canceled, I would be okay. The only issue is, like, they didn't really get final seasons, like, to say goodbye.
Yeah.
But I feel like Legends got there, you know, we sort of got, like, where the characters could sort of end up. But Batwoman, I feel like there's just so much potential there that was now lost because it's only been on for 3 seasons. We were just getting to the really good stuff with, like, you know, Ryan establishing herself and the Bat team and everything, her family. And it's just unfortunate that we won't get to see her flourish in this role. And it's even more unfortunate that now we're, like, down 2 shows where there were, like, LGBTQ, you know, relationships.
Yeah,
and
definitely.
We don't have that either. So it just really sucks all around. And I really blame the CW maybe being sold and all that stuff that's happening in WB. Because typically, it's like, CW is, like, the one network where I don't have to worry about shows not being renewed because they're typically always renewed. So it just sucks.
Yeah. And I know, like, some people were, like, pointing out the fact that Nancy Drew got renewed when it doesn't really have that great ratings either. Then someone else also pointed out that CBS is the holder for Nancy Drew, and that's why that got picked up. And so there's, like, different, you know, corporate reasons why some shows get picked up over other shows. But I definitely agree with you that it is a blow that you have 2 DC shows with LGBTQ rep not getting renewed. So you're down, like, a lot of representation already. And I especially felt bad for Batwoman just because I feel like this show should not have survived what it went through. Like, you lost your lead of your show. Like, the writers on this show did the impossible of revamping the entire show behind not only a new lead, but a new character. Like, there has been no Ryan Wilder before the show. And so they had to establish a whole new character to the comics and to here and wrap the entire show around her and all those characters that were connected to Kate in the beginning to Ryan now. And I feel like they delivered on that seamlessly. It was a pretty good transition the way that they did it. And then also just Javicia doing the impossible of coming into a show that's already, you know, I guess we can debate on how well oiled it was. How well oiled of a machine it was.
Oiled enough, but it wasn't, you know.
Based on like Ruby's like, you know, yeah. Right with what was happening behind the scenes. But you had a cast that had already gelled pretty much. And then you're throwing in this new person and she has to be the lead of this entire thing. And she has to, you know, drive the ship basically. And the fact that she was able to do that, the fact that she made Ryan Wilder her own, the fact that they built a legacy for this character that did not exist before, I think was really remarkable. And I think that she deserved another season, because half of her first season was just closing up ties from Ruby being gone. So I feel like, you know, and I know that the writers' rooms for both of the shows were talking about how, like, trying to get, like, petitions, sign change petitions to keep us going and pick us up somewhere, which I don't know. Like, I know that HBO Max is, like, responding to people, but for me, it's just, like, you know, whatever intern is behind the social media for the day is like, yes, you said customer service. Like, I have a problem at Netflix. Sure, please email us and you'll tell us how you can help, you know. So I don't know that anything will come from that. I mean, I don't know, because that one was already part of HBO Max's deal. Like, it wasn't on under Netflix. It was, you know, it shows up on HBO Max. So the fact that they did pick it up, I don't know. The fact that Gotham Knights is still,
I think that's the one production thing I'm salty about.
Exactly. Like, you canceled, like, you were, that, like, last time we were talking about it, I'm like, you have two shows. If this one gets dropped and this one gets picked up and they don't want two Batmans, then I'm going to be salty, because we had, you know, all of our loyalty is over here with mm-hmm. Batwoman. So I don't know.
Yeah. And I don't understand every little detail that goes on behind the scenes, obviously, but I would imagine that if you already have a show you've established, you put money in, it does cost more to put money into a new show, because you have to spend more on marketing and you have to, like, make sure everything looks great and blah, blah, blah. So it's really strange that they're like, well, let's axe Batwoman and go ahead with the
show. Let's axe this built-in fan base
and then go with this new shiny thing that could be hit or miss, because we don't know anything about it yet, as, you know, more than they've given us. But even if the series hasn't been formally ordered to the CW, it just doesn't, like, it doesn't sit right in my soul that Batwoman is the one that's axed. So, the business, unfortunately.
We move onwards and forwards. I guess, you know, and the one thing is nice to finally know, instead of continuing to have it be dragged out, but it is mm-hmm. sad times all around. So that's was basically the big news on the DC front. We did get, this is, like, not DC related, but it's big, like, you know, fandom related type news. If anyone is fans of the Percy Jackson series, we did get casting announcements for Annabeth and Grover. Is that his name?
I think so.
Yes.
It's been a long time since I read the books.
So Leah Sava will play Jeffries, Annabeth Jeffries, and Aryan Simhadri will join Walker Scobell, who is the title character, and Aryan will play Grover. So yay for them. It's a nice little diverse cast already. I know, like, a lot of people are especially excited for Annabeth because she has been cast. Leah Jeffries is Black. So we have Black female lead representation, and, you know, with Aryan as Grover, it's just, like, a nice, it looks like it's coming to be a nice, like, mm-hmm. diverse show. So hopefully that's a good thing for
age appropriate, because for yes. is like 12 or 13 years old. So that's great. Also, that's, I think, was it earlier this week that Danny Nicolette teased a big cameo?
Oh, yeah. But, I mean, who listens to Dane? I don't look out for her news. But, yes, that is also DC-related news. Going back to DC, Dane Nicolette had some interviews where she teased that there will be a surprise cameo in the finale, and it's someone that we won't expect, but we're going to be so excited to see. Any thoughts on who you think Danny thinks will be excited to see?
My first and only thought was Wally, and that's like, that's all I care about.
I think that's a good one. I saw some people for some reason saying the Trickster with like Mark Hamill. And I guess it would be a surprise, but also I feel like that's just like,
but would I care about the Trickster coming back though?
No, I feel like, I mean, Danny might. Danny would be like, oh my God, this is such a big hit. But for, I think for me and for like people that are actually concerned about the Flash family, Wally would be a surprise because getting, after Key left, trying to get him back up there has been.
Yeah, and he said he was supposed to come back to the show last season, right? But COVID.
Oh, yeah, COVID.
And so now I hope that the schedule is all aligned and miracles happen.
And it would be, you know, because we seen, you know, filming photos of like a big Flash family where you have like the Bart and Nora, we've seen Jay with Iris out on the field. So it feels appropriate if this is like finale big fight time. Like, why the fuck would the Trickster be back? Like, honestly.
Like, Wally, what would he be doing for the finale, really?
If you get like a full Flash family with Wally, that would be super cool. I would be excited for that. But anyways, we have, oh, and also if you do watch Superman and Lois, you have another hiatus. I saw that until the end of the month, so sucks for you.
That's why I've DVR'd it the whole time, and I'm like, I will just finish it when it's over because I can't keep up with all of these hiatuses. It's too much.
Yeah. But anywho, we are a long ways away from the Flash finale, so we will come back to the present and go over the two shows that we have for this week, are Naomi and The Flash. We'll talk about joys, no joys, and give feedback on, read your feedback, and select a lady with gumption of the week. So, take it away, May.
All right, for Naomi, well, side A, the only side, the Harry Potter of space / Master of Death. Naomi and Annabelle are looking forward to a perfect prom night with Nathan, Jacob, and their entire junior class. But nothing ever goes as planned when you're a teenage superhero, because Naomi is stuck inside the school with a force field around it. Nobody can get out or in, and she's forced to really be a superhero for the first time and face something on her own without the help of Dee Zimbardo or her parents, as she figures out how to disarm a bomb from one end of the school to the next to save her friends and the entirety of her junior class. So she had that to contend with while she got most of the truth finally, like pulling teeth from her parents about who they really are, who they were on Earth 29, and what happened. Like, they revealed they knew her parents, they revealed they were scientists, they were hired to fix the tear. Even though I feel like at that point, if it's a, you know, environmental catastrophe, what can you do, right? So all of that was happening on the show, and it was directed by Rebecca Belotu and written, I think, by Marawi Jirima. What sparked joy for you, Jess?
I have to say, because it sparked joy and a lot of like heartbreak, like, oh my God. But I like that this episode thematically as a whole is kind of like a love letter to Nathan and Naomi as a couple. Because we got like a couple of different flashbacks at different points in their relationship up until now. And there's been this like, you know, building tension between them. Because at first it was like, why the fuck did y'all break up? Like, I don't understand what's going on. And then they get back together. But now Naomi has the secret of not being from this earth that she's keeping from him, and he can feel it. And there's this tension about like, why won't you tell me the truth? And so in the mix of this tension between them, like really climaxing in this episode, you get flashbacks of where they started. And I like that. I really like that. Just as a off thought, that they meet in the comic book store because she's like super into comics, and he's like, yeah, my sister is into comics and I'm trying to figure out what to do. And it's like all of the girls in this show, because you have Lourdes, you have Naomi, really, that are huge comic book nerds, and the guys are just like, oh, he has a cape. Like, I don't understand.
So it's, I feel like that was like nice. You're not 10 years old.
Yeah, I feel like that's a nice, like, switch around. So I thought that was cute. And their little, like, frenemies to lovers, you know, story. I thought that was cute. The fact that Nathan's just like so smooth, like he's not fazed by the fact that she's annoyed that he doesn't like comics. But all of his like lines about fate and about destiny and making fate what you want it to be, it's kind of reminiscent of Iris's, like, you know, screw the future or whatever, like I make my own destiny, and that kind of all working out, and the fact that he, you know, put in the work to be with Naomi kind of just shows how much he actually like cares for her, and that is, this is like some kind of like trophy that he won when he beat out all of her seven exes, whatever, you know. I thought like they're, you know, they had their like, cute little song, and when she finally got to know him and they're talking about their similarities and all that kind of stuff, I was so relieved, because I was getting annoyed with her when he was like, tell me the truth, and she's just like silent. I'm like, tell him the truth. So I was really relieved when she actually did unburden herself and told him her past, that she's not from this earth, and that he accepted it, because of course he was, because he's Nathan. Like, why wouldn't he accept it? What were you afraid of, Naomi? And I really like that we have like a true foursome, because like in the beginning it was like a six person Scooby-Doo gang. I'm like, I don't like this, but this little four person double date prom, loved it. I like the dead man switch concept, where, you know, Jillian was like, you can either save the whole school or you can save your boyfriend and your best friend and her boyfriend. So I like that kind of dilemma. I thought it was funny. I think Naomi podcast was, they had this like tweet. There's like, you know, when Nathan and Annabelle are trying to sacrifice themselves and Jake is in the back, like, hold up, like, wait a minute. There is a third option here. So I thought that was a great way to get Naomi to level up, 'cause she's been practicing, and then we saw her with Mac, you know, on her own. She had her first like one-on-one fight, and now Jillian, there's a second test that she has to pass. Now she has like a second ability that's been unlocked in her super speed, so she's like leveling up a lot, which is, I'm sorry I keep saying leveling up, I know Flash fans are triggered. but I thought that was great. Even though I'll talk about it, how like it destroyed me in the No Joy, that they would break them up in this episode. I love the space that they gave Nathan and Naomi to have that kind of like final dance. And like, it wasn't like, you know, I love you, therefore I must leave you. There was an actual like conversation about the whole thing, and it didn't feel like a very, I must, you know, I must say goodbye to you and not explain it to protect you kind of deal. So I really liked how beautiful their breakup was, if I can say that. What else? On non-Nathan Naomi related news, I don't know. Well, no, I do know, because I agree with you that I like the fact that we finally get some concrete answers through Greg and Jen about Earth 29 and about like Brutus and about Naomi's parents. Still think there's some kind of relation to Zimbabwe, because otherwise, why is Greg and Jen so pressed about him? I don't know. But yeah.
Yes, I agree. In general, like, this episode finally felt like Naomi the superhero, and I like the fact that Nathan was the first one to call her that. Mm-hmm. And it's sort of like, I just loved Nathan this whole episode, really, because he was just being very romantic, very sweet, very patient, you know, like, even when she was annoyed about the whole comic book thing, he's just like, okay, you know, but I still like you, so I'm gonna come talk to you. So I just thought he was being like very thoughtful and everything, and I really like the fact that, you know, because we haven't seen anything from his character that would suggest he would shun her or mistreat her because she was, you know, an alien. So when it came to the point where she had to, where she felt that she finally could tell him about her past and her secret, it did feel a little bit more genuine. And I like it because it was in like a high stakes situation in general. It's like, okay, I can't, like, if we're all going to die, I am not going to lie to you anymore, you know? So the truth is going to come out. But she also did it on her own terms. And I really like the way that he took it, even like the idea of him like surprising himself. Because sometimes, you know, people think that they know how they're going to react in certain situations or how they're not going to act.
He was like adorably confused.
Yeah. Oh, I'm surprised too. You're an alien. I don't know what to do with that, but okay. You know, because to him, she's just Naomi, you know, even though she has this like, she's destined for something else or whatever. So I really like how they establish the relationship. And I think it's like the most that I like them just because, like you said, they gave them the space to be and the just like them feeling like partners in a lot of ways. And also when they're talking about destiny and all that, like, I like it that they differ in the ways, but in certain ways, like, you know, he believes in destiny. She doesn't necessarily believe in destiny, but it's not like something where he's pushing the idea onto her to believe and vice versa. And then when he does tell her like she's destined for greatness or whatever, like you said, it was a conversation. It is usually like, when she said that, you know, I can't be with you, I'm like, oh no, it's going to be that superhero trope. We're going to have it again. I can't deal with this. It's a lot. But it changed because it wasn't like he was going to let her say that and like walk away. And so it was nice that it was like a decision that they came to.
Yeah, because he was like, you know, you can leave, but I'm never going to leave you.
Yeah. Like where you go, I can't necessarily follow. Like I feel like next yes. episode is probably going to end up on Earth 29 or whatever. So he physically cannot follow her there, but she will always like, you know, be with her. And maybe, I don't know, they'll have flashbacks to him or whatever. So he's with her in spirit. And I do like the flashbacks we did get to the relationship. Cause I feel like for a while, even if they were going to be together, it felt like the show was putting in obstacles for them to the point where they would break up, but it wouldn't be for like good reasons. It would be just like their first breakup all over again. Mm-hmm. So this felt more authentic to their relationship and their evolution as a couple in general. And as people, especially as like Naomi grows her powers. And speaking of, I love the fact that she got super speed basically in this episode. She got to be a hero. She got to realize like she can do all of these things on her own, because it's true what Julian said. It was like, you have been helped. Your friends help you. Your parents have helped you. Zimbardo and Dee have helped you. Like, what is it that you can do on your own? And how are you going to kind of like prove yourself in a lot of ways? So I feel like this was her like coming of age moment where she had to figure out all of these things on her own and make a big decision of how she was going to go about saving everyone in the school. And I think that she did like a great job in, you know, doing all that and believing in herself, but also still having the support from everyone around her at the same time. Greg and Jen finally telling her the truth. Amazing. I like that they were finally like open. Even when he, you know, Greg paused and she's like, no more lies. He's like, I guess I got to tell you the rest of the story. So that was really nice. And it just finally felt like they were all on the same page, even though like I agree that it's not, there's still something, a puzzle piece that's missing here, but we'll probably get that in the finale. But in general, I like where we left off with them. Like, she's still mad, but she got answers, and now it's like up to her how to move forward with these answers. Zimbardo and Dee didn't really do that much this episode, but you know, I always enjoy when they're on screen together. What did not spark joy?
I have to mention another thing that sparked joy for me thematically is that the whole prom being kind of like a all the horror movie references. Thank you, Annabelle. So it's like a Carrie situation. Carrie was referenced at some points. It felt like Scream, especially when they were on the CB radio trying to get to Dee.
Yeah.
Like, she was like, Dee, you can't come to the phone right now.
I know. I was like, oh, is that you?
I was like, what's your favorite scary movie, Naomi? What other? There was a couple of other kind of like horror type elements that I thought made it like really a cool twist on the prom theme, because you'd think like there'd be all these prom tropes, but there's like, no, this is a horror movie. So that was fun. Things that did not spark joy, having Nathan and Naomi break up at the end, because like I was so annoyed, first of all, in the beginning when, you know, they're at prom, she's with her dates, and then she runs off with like Annabelle and Jacob to do something, and Nathan's like, where have you been? He's like, homework. Like, really?
Like, at prom, really?
Yeah, at prom. Like, we just really had some homework to do. Or, like, he caught you, like, red-handed in the principal's office with the CB radio. You look suspicious, and you don't want to say, like, that would be the time to say something. Like, why are you not? I don't understand. So the fact that she did that was like, oh, my God, I'm so relieved. Because I would not blame him. I didn't blame him. It's like, I'm leaving with you, Nathan. Like, this is just ridiculous at this point. But the fact that they went through all of that, the fact that he knew and was chill with it, was like, I'm going to support you because you're my girlfriend. They survived. And then you want to break them up? Like, when she started saying, like, you know, it's always going to be like this, and yeah, you can't imagine how it feels possibly to lose you. I'm like, no, oh, don't do it. Don't do it. No. And then she did it. But it's like, you know, we had this conversation before, because Annabelle, we had the same thing where, you know, Naomi was like, I must stay away from you to protect you. And Annabelle was like, no, like, if I'm going to be in danger, it's because I want to be here. So I'm like, why did we still have to have this conversation with her and Nathan? So that was a little bit frustrating. As beautiful as it was, it's still like frustrating. Like, why can you not have it all? But it does make sense. That's a nice little like prediction that maybe it's because they physically will not be near each other. I don't know. So that did not spark joy. I also feel like Greg and Jen should just let it go with somebody. They are like pressed about him for, you know, unless, you know, you want to tell me exactly why we should all be pressed about Zimbabwe at this point, just let it go. I don't understand why you're so pressed about this man. Oh, and Julian, just like the idea, you know, that there are these grown people are coming after a teenager. I'm like, don't you have someone your own age to bully? Like, why are you coming to like kill a child? Like, doesn't make sense to me. Like, does Earth 29 people have nothing else to do?
I guess not. Like, yeah. Things must be so bad there.
I don't. Yeah.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think I would just like to meet Brutus at this point, and I know we're building up to that, but it's just like Brutus mm-hmm. keeps sending all these henchmen. It's like, you know, if you want something done right, Brutus, I'm sorry, you're gonna have to come do it yourself. So, you know, that's been frustrating over the last like 4 episodes or so. But I feel like they did give Jen and Greg more to do this episode, but I still feel like now that the secret's revealed, I'm like, what's next for them, you know? But I didn't think about it for too long because the episode was too good, but it crossed my mind. And then, of course, I did dislike the breakup. Not dislike it, but, like, it did not
spark joy.
It did not spark joy because, again, like, even if they're physically separated, I don't understand why they have to be broken up, because it's not like she's not
being... She might not get with nobody else. That's all I'm saying right now.
She didn't try to break up with Annabelle when she, you know, Annabelle's known for she's an alien for like the whole season, and then Jacob
she did at friend. One point, and the animal was like no, and then she's like, okay, yeah you're right. So
I just feel like it's like, what is the reason? Because the defense is always like, even if you break up with someone, that you still obviously care about them.
It's not like he's not people gonna, are, you know, she's going to see him tomorrow at school.
Yes, like, exactly. And like, people are still going to know that you care about this person. They might come after them anyway, whether you're together or not. So it just never really mattered. And I never really got that argument. So I was upset that it had to happen this way. Maybe it'll be set up for like some kind of nice reunion. Or, I mean, I'm just happy that the obstacle wasn't like Anthony.
Oh, God.
You know? Who wasn't even in this episode, which is another thing. It's not that I dislike that he wasn't not in this episode, but I did wonder why.
I didn't notice it.
It's like, why, in a situation where it does call for a group setting, why, where is Anthony? Does, like, I don't know, does he not want to go to prom, or, I don't
well,
know.
I guess, like, if he did have him there, then he would also be in on the secret, and we can't.
Yeah, sure, sure. But they could have just, like, sent him to the bathroom or something, you know?
Yeah.
So, I don't know. But do we have any, oh no, do we have any feedback for Naomi?
We do actually. Swara decided to grace us with his presence again.
Yeah, he apologized. He's like, I'm so sorry. I forgot to send feedback last week, but he's back this week.
So Swara says, Naomi was pretty good. I especially appreciated Naomi coming clean with Nathan. He was right to call her out that she didn't trust him. I think I've accepted that the show is very much a high school setting and not going for the superheroes quite yet. But I really hope that next season there will be more on that front. Looking forward to the season finale. Which is a 2-hour season finale, by the way.
That's right.
That was all the feedback for Naomi.
More TV to catch up on. All right. do we have predictions?
I think you had an interesting one in the sense that maybe we go to Earth 29.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that would be like the because I can't see Brutus coming to Earth. Our Earth. Yeah. So it'd be like
you have to go to him.
To go there, yeah.
Like, what is your deal?
Exactly. It's like, why do you keep hunting me? Where I'm trying to go to school and do my homework.
Oh, there's a car crash in the. In the preview trailer, so do you think Greg and Jen die?
Oh no, I would.
Because that was the thing. Like she was like, "Oh my god, my parents!" But we don't really know. Like,
yeah, yeah. I definitely wouldn't want them to. I feel like that would just. I don't need the angst, and I just feel sad because I feel like they still have a lot to talk about. You know.
Yeah, and I don't know where they would go from there. Like killing them off, or killing both of them off. That I feel like that'd be too drastic of a jump.
Yeah.
And like, unless she gets adopted by Zine in Dubadu.
My two very like emo dads.
Yes. And then I might not be so opposed. Me and my two dads. Okay.
Well, we can keep Jen. Greg, you know, either way is fine.
Yeah, I feel like we can take or leave Greg. Sorry.
Sorry, Greg. All right. Moving on to The Flash. Team Flash is under attack by Deathstorm, who really, really, really wants Caitlin to be his bride. So he's allowing all the grief in the city to be absorbed into her. So we see Eddie show up. We see... Who else shows up?
Esperanza.
Chuck's dad. Everybody who... And Barry's mom. So people to come, like, haunt them. In many ways, so that, you know, Deathstorm can feed Caitlin all the grief in the world and they can go off together in wherever he came from. desperate to save her sister, Killer Frost comes up with a plan with Mark to stop Deathstorm and, like, try to help Caitlin wake up. So she basically, like, I don't even know the science.
Well, it's kind of like a continuation of Team Flash's plan before they got like sidetracked, like some kind of like they're gonna make her into an anti-death storm basically.
Yeah, she becomes
had, like the final piece,
mm-hmm. Which basically like allowed her to take some part of Caitlin in a lot of ways to be sort of the mid ground between heat and cold to defeat Death Storm, and she did, which was amazing because Death Storm was basically telling her that she is not a real girl. And so she had to stand up to this fool. So that did happen. And then her, with great sacrifice, comes death usually on these shows. And so Frost, unfortunately, died to save Caitlin and everyone else in Central City. And there was a lot of grieving in the end. And that is what you missed in The Flash. So what sparked joy?
I feel like it sparked joy to me that I was pleasantly surprised. This was kind of like a good-ass episode. I thought there was a lot of really good tension and especially like Eddie, Rick Cosnett being just like super creepy. And the fact that, you know, Sue was just like, who is this attractive blonde man in your house? And the fact that he was pretending like he wasn't dead for a while, but just like there's those obvious signs like him heating the kettle with his hand, mm-hmm. that he is not a human being or any part of Eddie whatsoever.
He's not a real boy.
He is not a real boy at all. So I thought that those were great. Like Chuck's dad being like, you let her call you Chuck, Chester's dad.
I had the same thought.
So like Chester's dad and Esperanza like torturing the two of them. I thought, you know, even Nora, you know, telling Barry that your legacy is heartbreak. You're never going to be anything. Robbie Amell was like a superstar in this episode. I thought he did a fantastic job being an asshole as Deathstorm. He had like a lot of presence behind Deathstorm, making him feel very otherworldly, non-human, powerful, master of death is what he called himself. So it felt like they were in danger throughout the episode, so I thought that was great. Danielle looking like death was like the best acting like ever. That was really committed. But like, you know, her slowly deteriorating throughout the episode, Frost stepping up in a huge way to save her sister. Even like I thought the heart to heart was like long, but with her and Mark, I felt that it was a good talk between the two of them, especially coming off of the one that she had with Deathstorm when he was like, "You're a loser. I can't get anything off of you because you don't have anything. You don't have a soul. You're not worth me trying to bully." So all of that was great. It was a very nice, I think, character story for Frost and culmination of everything that she's been through from the minute that she split apart from Caitlin and was trying to build this whole like life for herself. And, you know, she's gone, made all these milestones, and you have Deathstorm telling her, "You're still not a real person because you don't have a soul, loser." And then Mark coming in and being like, you know, "That's not necessarily true. Look what I've all done. How could I love somebody that doesn't have a soul?" You know, and taking her to that next step of releasing the emotion to, you know, become Hellfrost. I thought Hellfrost was pretty cool. The look needs some work, but I thought the fact that she could, you know, go evolve into Hellfrost, and that's like a new like character or something like that, I thought that was pretty cool. I thought Sue and Iris's friendship continues to be like the best. You know, Sue's just in general, like the way that she's so quickly able to adapt to these weird ass situations. And like Eddie in the apartment, I thought like she and Iris were like, you know, on the same vibe length, as, you know, Iris is like distracting, quote unquote, Eddie about some kind of soup he's trying to make. And, you know, Sue's using that to call in Joe, the fact that Joe remembers he has a daughter.
Finally.
Yes, all of that I thought was like good stuff. Yeah, I think it was like a surprisingly good, there's some things that I would have changed about this episode, particularly who died, but you'll get to that later. But overall, I thought it was a lot of good build up, a lot of good tension, a lot of good, you know, the stakes were definitely appropriately high. I thought it was a great episode for Frost. Yeah,
I definitely agree. I did not look down at my phone too often except to tweet. And I did think, I think I haven't really felt this way about an episode since maybe like 617, where like Mirror Iris fights Barry, and then the previous one with like blood work. Those were like really intense episodes, and I feel like season 7 had none of that. But now we're back, and we have this one light at the end of the tunnel with this episode, and I think that it really ramped up the tension, and I feel like it really worked because it was so psychologically damaging in a lot of ways. Like the way that Deathstorm like fucked with everyone was through their mind, you know, like even Nora talking to Barry, just like, "You're gonna lose Iris. Like, how could you say that to me?"
And then Eddie's like, your death is gonna be just as pointless as mine. Welcome to the club.
I was like, damn, Eddie. But even like the fact that he brought up, you know, Fawn coming back again and again, he's like, "Yes, I sacrificed myself for no reason." I was like, "You're right. but true. It's fine. But I'm
thank you for your service anyway.
Yes, exactly. And I just feel like the build up with all these people hearing these certain things that are triggering for them, because it's the things that they think about, the things that they care about, was really good and intense, because it really brought out like how everyone kind of functions in a lot of way. Like how is a villain going to like draw out the parts of them that are, you know, gonna affect them? Like what's gonna push their buttons? And I really like the fact that Deathstorm really pushed everyone's buttons in so many ways. I think for like most of the episode, it wasn't until like 40 minutes into the hour that, you know, they figured out how to stop him. And it was really great because it was just like the best part of the episode. Everyone's just kind of like suffering. I don't like it, but it's really good storytelling. So that was really great. And just the fact that they were all stuck, like separating all of them so that they could continue facing their own demons, was really good too. And I agree, like Robbie and Mel really sold Deathstorm, like really talking to Frost, like he really doesn't care. He's like, you are beneath me. Like, you don't have a soul. Why? Why are you even here?
I saw like a tweet that was like, you know, like the handshake emoji, like Thawne calling Caitlin a loser, and Deathstorm like Frost a loser.
Cinematic parallels. So yeah, it was just like a really, really intense episode. And even like, I agree about Sue and Iris. I like the fact that they were both calm and collected. Like Iris is just like, yes, I've heard about you. You must be this apparition, and I will not believe anything you say. And even like Barry's scenes with fake Nora were really good too, because it shows how much he's grown. Because like it shows that he's actually moved on from his mom's death, and that he's still affected by other people's deaths, but not like in the way that he was affected by hers. And just the fact that like still thinking about losing Iris is like triggering for him.
Yeah. And then like him standing up to quote unquote fake Nora about like, you know, I'm gonna fight for Iris and all that kind of stuff was great.
Yeah, it was. And the same thing for Iris. She's like, no, like I don't believe you, you're not real, you know, like they're the people who were just like, I'm above this. I know what's going on here, and you're not gonna trick me. So all of that was really good. And even like the
it was kind of like at some points I was like, you know, like I know she's not gonna die, but like now you're kind of scaring me a little bit because she's like, she's got blood coming out. Like, say psych soon.
I was like, wait a minute, are you trying to tell us something? But yeah, all of it's just like such a well done episode in general in terms of like the emotions of it, because it feels like we really got that back. Like people were actually caring about something, and I feel like that's been missing. For a while, and it's been nice to have something to fight for that was like really, really, it felt really pressing. So that was good. And even like the final scene was really good too, just the way that like everyone sort of leaned on each other in grief and whatnot. Like you really felt that moment was a weighty one, because like Frost has been here for a long time, and you know, I've enjoyed her snarkiness from time to time, and just like her, I think that she's had a better developed story than Caitlin for the last like 3 or 4 seasons, from the fact that like she tried to have a life. She doesn't understand people. She doesn't understand life in general. She doesn't really understand anything beyond like protecting Caitlin, anything like that. But she did try. She gave it a go. She found love. She did all these things. And I think that is really great for such a character who's sort of like for a while felt like they didn't really know what to do with her or how to separate her from Caitlin or how to make her be her own person or even how to like utilize her out in the field too. So I feel like this, despite like me being sad that she's the one who had to die, it felt like it was a true culmination of an arc that was going on for a while and felt true to who she was as a person as we've come to know her. So yeah, all of that was great. But what did not spark joy?
Not nitpicky, because it is very picky. Or is it not the nit? I don't know. But the fact that when Eddie tries to like rebound and give Sue and Joe nightmares, Sue sees her grandmother and Joe's like, Cher! I'm like, who is Cher? You say Cher? Like, who is that? He's like, it's his partner from season one. I'm like, not Francine, like what, why? Okay. So the fact that no one cares about Francine. Biggest not sparking joy is I just feel like, well, okay, this sparked joy because I chuckled, but I also, the way that she died was so, like, odd. The way, and
your tweet made me laugh. Like, I was just scrolling through. Like, it's like she opened her eyes, saw Kaylin, and just
chose that. That's exactly, because there was no emotion behind it. She just, like, opened her eyes and it's like, again. And it's insane because Danielle is acting against Danielle. So if you can't come up with emotion for yourself, like, what are you doing? There was no, like, I would expect to be, like, you know, at least some kind of, like, smile or satisfaction. Like, yes, Katie is okay. I can go now. But it's just like, you're alive. You're like, oh, no, thank you. So the way that she died was just, like, so odd to me. But then also the fact that it was Frost that died and not Caitlyn, because I just feel like if we're choosing between the two, I like Frost a lot more than Caitlyn anyway. But also just in terms of story-wise, like you were saying, like, she had all of this story and it wasn't like a closed story. It was a continuation. Like, thank God for whoever Chilblain's actor is, because I feel like he had more emotion and being upset about Frost's death than the actual death and her dying. Like, I was like, oh my God, like, you know, he's going to take her on. I thought, low-key, I thought he was going to propose during this trip that he's planning. And that's why I was, like, so, like, emotional for him.
Yeah. Actually, I did forget to say, Mark was this sparked joy. He was, like, the first time I actually liked Mark in the entire time he's been on this show.
Exactly. And it was just a build up for her death. And it was,
I know.
Like, you know. But the fact that he had all of this, like, emotion, they still had a story to go on. Caitlyn has had zero story. She even let go of the beginning of the story that she's going to have with Marcus, or whatever his name is, whatever version of Mark his name is, to chase after Ronnie. So for me, like, in my thinking, since you were going to go with him anyway, like, why not you be the one to die or have it, like, work out that way? Or, like, also because of Frost's whole backstory, like, when she's even when she's talking to Mark and talking about how the first memory she has isn't even of anything about herself. It's because she got pushed out to protect Caitlyn when Caitlyn got hit by a car. So she took on that damage while Caitlyn gets to live her life. And then she has to go back to sleep when Caitlyn gets to live her life continuously. So it just really doesn't seem fair that for once, when Caitlyn could have taken the damage to let Frost live, that doesn't happen. So I just feel like if we are coming out of a, you know, complete story or, like, building a story for Frost, having her graduate from having to be the one to, like, her only reason for being is taking care of Caitlyn, and to like, finally, like, be her own self because Caitlyn decided to take that fall for her, I felt like would have been a better, like, thank you, Caitlyn. Thank you for your service. Now let Frost, you had the first 30 years of your life. Now let Frost enjoy the next 30, you know? So not really happy about the choice of Snow that we are continue to have left. I also feel like as emotional as the final scene was of everybody mourning, I feel like it was very odd that you have Caitlyn falling to the ground, crying, having a meltdown, and everyone's just like, I got nothing.
And Mark, like, could have gone to her because, like, he was also crying on his own.
Well, I mean, and he ran away upset, which I don't fault him for that because he's, like, upset or whatever. But you have, like, Barry's going to hug Iris, you know, Chester and her leg are hugged. Cecile's trying to figure out which interracial couple she wants to throuple with. And then she remembers that Joe is there. She's like, okay, I guess I'll hug Joe. And it's so long before someone's like, oh, I guess I should go hug. Like, Cecile's like, oh my God, I'm tired of hugging Joe. Let me go console Caitlyn. So I just feel like that was, like, very odd because you have everyone that's, like, kind of, like, quiet, and you have, like, Caitlyn just, like, like, bawling, crying by herself in the corner. I feel like they could have, it would have worked better as a split scene, because another thing that I didn't really understand is why they have Caitlin coming in after Barry. Like, because Barry could have delivered that news, but they had Caitlin coming in behind him, like some kind of like Grey's Anatomy moment where the doctor has to tell, you know, I'm sorry, your loved one didn't make it. But it's her loved one too. Like, why would she leave Frost's side, first of all? I feel like if my family member died, I am staying over there in that space, breaking down with them, have Barry come and tell the team, then Mark can go run to Frost, and then you can have two split scenes of, you know, Frost with the people that were the closest to her, her sister and her boyfriend, having their grief session over there, and the people in Team Flash over here just looking sad, you know? Mm-hmm. So it seemed a little odd the way that they did, because they tried to force it into like a team moment when I felt like it should have been like a family moment, and then friends of family in like a separate room. So I thought that was some odd directing choices there.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Especially since, like you said, you know, Mark ran off and there could have been a moment between.
Yeah, it could have been like running to to Frost.
Yeah, because she didn't get enough time. It's like, I think she's gone, and then she just stood there, yes. And then it cuts to the next.
And I also feel like, and I don't know if this played into her, Danielle just being like, oh, I'll just close my eyes. But the fact that she died in like the last 3 minutes, it felt like rushed. And the CGI for the fight between Deathstorm and Hellfrost was like, can y'all not just, can you stay on the ground? Because I feel like putting them in the air makes the CGI worse, as opposed to them if they were like fighting on the ground or something. I don't know. But the fight was like a little bit anticlimactic. I felt like it was over too soon because they spent so much time ballooning up the buildup to getting Frost to the point where she could become Hellfrost, that the fight just felt very quick and anticlimactic. And then there wasn't a lot of time for her to die. Mm-hmm. So she just had to like, whoop.
He's like, I'll save you 30 seconds. It's fine.
Yeah.
I think I was also, I was saying this last week, like I thought that Caitlin was going to die. And to me that made sense because I thought she would figure that like Frost has sacrificed all this for her, you know, and then she sort of like put everyone in danger, that maybe it's like time for her to stand up to her ex/alien dude.
If you're going to release Ronnie, like if Deathstorm dies and Ronnie has been released, then why wouldn't you just like follow Ronnie?
Mm-hmm, exactly.
And that would have been the complete of her story.
Yeah, and that would have been like they could gone off into the, like, I don't know, Ghost Sunset or something like that together. But
hey, if what's her face, Elicity?
They can do Elicity.
If they can do it,
it's true. And I feel like what really bothers me about Frost's death is that like she had so much more to live for, and I feel like Caitlin's been on the show for 8 seasons now, and for the most part, we haven't really seen her story or her character development progress in any significant way. Like, we're in season 8, and she was still mourning Ronnie. She was still not able to be in another relationship because of Ronnie. She was so willing to give up that relationship because of Ronnie, even though she wasn't even sure if that was him or not. And so, the idea that you could send away such a spirited character versus one who has stayed like pretty much stagnant for the whole majority of the show is just upsetting, because now it feels like we have Caitlin, but it's like, okay, what is Caitlin going to be doing? Because it's like
morning
her, yeah, but like even on the team, like what, she hasn't really had a storyline. Some of the more interesting stuff has been for Frost, you know, and Caitlin's sort of been like using Frost as a jumping off point too, to kind of like, maybe I should go back to dating because I see Frost is so happy with Mark, or all of these other things that she might have felt. But I don't feel like we got enough of that for her to kind of like justify her still being alive. At least in this, if you would have to choose between both, either of them, it would be Caitlin for me. But Frost just did have a lot more life to her, and she was still like sort of like a child, like exploring what life could be and stuff like that. And I feel like Caitlyn did have this life, and I don't think she really did with it what she could have. So it does suck that, like, the superior sister had to go. And I agree. I feel like Francine could have showed up, especially since, like, as soon as Joe came, he could have seen her. She could have either popped in or he could have said her name, and then that would have triggered maybe something in Iris, and we could have, like, some scene there. But it did not happen. It was just...
Or if you have to have, like, Eddie for Iris, you could, you know, there would have been a lot of material of Francine, you know, about Joe for, like, abandoning her.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And it was just, like, I mean, even with what's her face? Cecile. Like, her powers.
That's, like, she didn't do a damn thing. She just, like, felt the whole episode. I have a lot of feelings.
She felt the whole episode, and, like, she didn't... She talked about her mom's passing, like, was it season 6, season 7, whatever.
It's like last season.
Yeah, and so I figured that would come into play again, but it didn't. And what's really interesting, and somebody brought this up, I was like, yeah, you're right, you know? She was saying she could feel everybody's feelings, even, like, Iris, who's in the loft. But when Frost died, she couldn't feel Caitlin's grief from, like, down the hall, basically. So she would have, like, known that Frost was dead already. Yeah. I know they were saving that to be, like, a dramatic moment, but again, it's just, like, the inconsistency.
Oh my god, if she had ruined that, like, I feel grief. Way beside, it's not over yet, guys.
Yeah, so it's just, like, the inconsistency that bothered me, because it doesn't make any sense, and I wish that they would either start making sense or just kind of remove her from certain storylines, like, you know, do what they did with Cisco a couple of seasons ago. He doesn't have to be in every episode if you're not going to give him anything to do. So you could do the same with Cecile, because at this point she's just being nosy in everybody's lives, and I don't even know if people appreciate that or not. I'm sure they don't. But anyway, feedback. Do we have any?
Yes. So Suarez says, "Hello, ladies. So I understand the exploration of trauma and grief, and that is an important fact." I know he's about to be shady. "You know, I understand the importance of trauma and grief, and that it's an important facet of our lives. While this episode was well acted and directed, the thing is, we've done this so many times in the show before, especially for Barry. Honestly, as creepy and uncomfortable as he is, the only exploration of this grief that was needed for is Iris, is for Iris. She never got the time to fully grieve Eddie all those seasons ago, if I recall correctly. And we should have had the spotlight and the return of Eddie as Cobalt Blue way sooner. Candace was fantastic as per usual, but alas, we aren't writing the show. On Frost, okay, so what was the point? Why bemoan and ponder about becoming a real person if she was going to die anyway? And not even acted out that well? What? That's all I've got on that. Also, Chester and Allegra have no chemistry, even near death. The show is a mess." And then we have... Sonia, where are you? I swear to God, I saw Sonia. Hold on. Stay tuned. Oh, wait, was that last week?
It was, yes.
It was. Oh, my God.
Sonia didn't send us feedback this week? Oh, no.
I swear to God, she sent some feedback. What happened to you, Sonia?
Oh, you know what? Hold on.
Did it get trashed?
I think it got trashed. I'll move it back to the primary.
Oh, it did. Okay. I got it. I found it.
Okay.
Sorry. Sorry, Sonia. I was like, I swear I saw her. So Sonia says... "Hey, ladies, it was great to see Rick Cosman in the role of Deathstorm Eddie, as it was somehow both sweet and creepy at the same time. The whole Deathstorm being older than time and Deathstorm finding Ronnie's thing reminds me of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. with the Coulson and Sarge storyline season 6. Deathstorm taunting Frost over not being a real person and not having emotions, a consciousness, and a soul, Oldsburg girl. Laughed my ass off at the tea/soup scene. Candace and Natalie really acted that scene out, especially the way Sue said... Eddie, and then looked at Iris with a what the fuck expression, and the way Iris said some soup. When Cecile mentioned Iris's grief and that Deathstorm was targeting her, and it didn't even face either her or Frost that Iris was being targeted to, like, why does no one care about what's going on with Iris? Deathstorm, Nora trying to use Wes Allen and his future kids not existing in her death against Barry, but it didn't work. So then she just let it more grieve over every person who's ever lost. Oh my God. I'm glad they brought up the fact that Eddie's sacrifice is pointless, because I remember back in season 2 when Thawne came back, I felt bad that Eddie sacrificed himself and it didn't even work. Sue being able to hit the panic button and Joe coming to save his daughter and calling Eddie Detective Pretty Boy, LOL. Why did they use Joe losing Shire and not Francine regarding someone he loved? Why did they keep referring to Eddie as Iris' fiance? She never actually accepted his proposal.
Yes, exactly. Drives me insane.
Deathstorm can't use Iris' grief against her since she knows this isn't real, so he uses the grief over her time sickness and dying against her. Oh my God. Frost experiencing real love and grief when she became the anti-Deathstorm, and that terrible wig and those eyebrows, she called herself Hell Frost. Like, what the fuck? The power, I can feel it radiating off you. Just make Cecile just shut up. Oh my God. I talked to Iris. Deathstorm sent one to the loft. And you're telling me Barry didn't immediately run to the loft to be with Iris because his lightning doesn't even work against Deathstorm? He could have just run there from the loft if Brock needs help. This is so dumb. Oh, speaking of, and she might, maybe she'll say it, but also the fact that Mark just casually finds out that Barry is a Flash, that was so annoying.
I was like, another person, like, it's not your secret to tell, Frost.
And it's the fact that they said it so casually, I feel like they almost forgot that he didn't know.
Yeah.
Because that's kind of, like, what it felt like. And then he was like, oh, my God. And he's, like, putting it
together. Barry doesn't even react. He's just like, I guess, you know, another person.
Yeah, Barry's like, oh, whoops, well, yeah, that's me. It's stupid that they killed off Frost, as she's the one with powers in an interesting storyline. And now Caitlyn is probably going to go back to season 1, Caitlyn, who lost someone and has to stick up her ass. Like, why wouldn't they just kill Caitlyn? Ugh. Oh, that dark Mark was planning for them. That date Mark is planning for them with the skydiving in the restaurant with the desserts made of ice. And we, as viewers, know that Frost is dead. It's just so sad. I never thought I'd be sad over Mark and Frost. Same, girl. She's excited for the next episode and can't wait to see what the new villain will be since it's not Deathstorm anymore. And then she said, sorry for the double email, but I just can't stop laughing at Cecile being all, she's going to be okay, I can feel it. Whatever, because it's like, what good are Cecile powers if she can't feel Frost is dead? Also, Grant not even being able to muster real tears. This is worse when Oliver died. And that is the end of that.
That is funny. Predictions?
I mean, this is like the end of it. It's kind of hard to predict. Because the only other thing that's left unresolved is Iris's time sickness. And mm-hmm. They won't tell us anything about it. So I'm not really sure what to predict about it.
Yeah, I feel the same. I think this is not it's like a half prediction, half worry. But I feel like, now that they brought Mark back and they're going to be grieving Frost, my worry / prediction is that she's going to try to replace her on the team.
Please no.
Especially since we found out Barry's identity, and you know how this show loves to replace everybody.
I think he'll just like pop in. He'll be like Sue and like pop in when they need something, but I cannot see him staying full time.
I hope not, because just because I like Mark this episode doesn't mean I want him every episode.
No, oh my God. Like, he'll be in next episode because they're grieving or whatever. Mm-hmm. But after that, I feel like he'll, you know, go off somewhere.
I hope so. And I would hope that Frost's death really makes Caitlin want to feel more alive and actually start to, like, want to do things with her life besides sitting in her laps, because she's in her back to Marcus and do, you know.
That's a good one. So I like that. How do we think that, because we know this next episode will be Candace's last, because mm-hmm. she won't be in the next 4. So what about her time sickness? Do we think it's going to, like, is she just going to be like poof and like green sparks and disappear herself? Or, and I bet it'll happen in the last like 2 minutes of the episode.
Probably. Yeah, I mean, I do think that she's going to disappear. I feel like it might play out the same way that it did when she disappeared after Tinya vanished her. Be stuck in the Still Force for the next 4 episodes, and maybe
there's no Still Force because, like, Deanna's gone.
That's right. Yeah, then I got nothing. I don't know. If she disappears, I would imagine it might be, if it's not the Steel Force, then maybe, like, the future. We can finally get something about that storyline, and...
Maybe Eobard will finally come back, and he'll, like, kidnap her into the future or something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that would be fun. Just to get Barry all, like, emotional about it, and finally, like, kick in the whole, like, let's save Iris campaign, you know? Which would be nice, because I feel like that... She would have to disappear for people to start taking it seriously. And that's the only way that they're going to do that. So, you know, flash in the flash. Lady with Gumption of the Week. Who do we think should get it?
I mean, it's like Naomi versus Frost. And I feel like it has to be Frost for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. Just because, like, it was the ultimate sacrifice.
R.I.P. Frost.
Yes, R.I.P. Frost. You had a good run. Sorry, it had to be you.
Yeah, I'm so mad. I can't even be fully petty about all of, like, the, like, Ding Dong, Frost, and Zed. Like, they're funny, but I just wish it was Kaylin instead.
Yeah, so it's like Devil Saturn on the front line here. Like, damn it. All right, Frost gets our Lady with Gumption of the Week. We will be back next week to talk more about Flash and Naomi's season finale. And also, eventually, this month, we're going to do a Patreon episode on Everything, Everywhere, All at Once. So stay tuned for all of that. We'll see you back next week. Same bat time, same bat place. And again, you can send all your feedback to ladieswgumption@gmail.com, over to Tumblr at ladieswgumption.tumblr.com, and of course, tweet with us or reply to us on Twitter when we live tweet at DCTV Gumption. Until then, take care, everybody. Bye.
Bye.